This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about polenta.
Yes. Was there any particular reason this one was on your mind?
Oh, I have no idea anymore. It was so long ago. Days and
days. Days.
Mm-hmm. I guess I was probably looking for a grain or a dish or something. Mm-hmm. And then it sounded tasty. And I was like, yeah. All right, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's already on my grocery list.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but I actually have only had polenta once in my entire life.
What?
Yes.
How?
And I remember when it was.
Okay.
Specifically, I was a grown adult. And it was for back when Kristen Conger and Ben Bolin had the video series Food Stuff.
Uh-huh.
We interviewed a local chef. And he made polenta.
Okay.
And that was the first and only time I've had it. I've definitely had things that I've seen people fight about very similar, similar things like grits.
Mm-hmm,
But polenta, that was it. That was my time. And it was delicious.
Sure.
It
was
so good.
Sure. I've had more than one polenta in my life. I have eaten at a lot of Italian restaurants or Italian themed dishes. I've made it myself a number of times. I've always made like the kind of porridge kind, but I have been looking at photographs of really tasty looking preparations of a more firm like sliced polenta situation, and then like grilled or like fried, and I'm like, oh no, like there's a polenta world out there that I need in my life.
There is. And in fact, we've mentioned recently, Lauren and I, the Savor team, might be traveling soon.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I think it's happening. I believe they've booked it.
I don't know. I'm so like, anything could change at any time. But yeah, I think it's going to happen. And I happened to be looking at menus last night.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I saw a lot of places had polenta fries.
Sure, yeah. That is a photograph that I've encountered a number of times over the over this reading cycle, and I am incredibly interested in it.
Well, it might be in our future.
Let's do it. We will report back.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was funny because when I was looking at the menus, like, so many things, I was like, oh, we did an episode on that. I have to get that. And that. so, yes, we will report back. But I guess this brings us to our question.
Sure.
Polenta. What is it?
Well, polenta is a type of staple grain porridge that is typically made from yellow cornmeal as a savory dish, though it can come in just a lot of different varieties and forms. It can be cooked up anywhere from like soft and spoonable to sliceable to so firm that, right, it can be fried in cubes or fries and eaten with your fingers. It can be the base of, say, an impressive roast or stew kind of dish, or be the simple feature unto itself. You can make it sweet if you really want to. I can't tell you not to. It's like if grits had a wider repertoire. It can be an amazing backing player or the top billing as this straightforward permutation of like what corn can be. You know, how it's a grain that can be tender and creamy and comforting with very few additions. It's so simple and it can contain multitudes. It's like, Do you have that friend, or maybe you are that friend, who makes things look effortless because of the sheer amount of preparation that they've put into whatever it is that they're doing? Polenta can be like that.
Oh. Yeah. Thanks, Polenta.
Right?
Yes.
So yes, these days, polenta is usually made from whole grain yellow corn that has been dried and ground into either a coarse or medium grain meal. The types of corn used are flint corn or dent corn. These are starchy types that are not as sweet and juicy as the sweet corns that we cook and eat fresh or off the cob or whatever. So the corn is dried and ground, and to prepare polenta, you heat the cornmeal with like 2 to 4 times as much liquid until the particles of corn are totally hydrated. And further, you're usually looking to agitate the mix by stirring frequently or perhaps constantly. I have no spoon in this game. This will help break up some of the starch molecules, which will then like chain and scaffold together in a sort of gel matrix with the water to form a soft structure. Like you don't want your polenta to be runny or grainy particularly. Like it should be anywhere from, say, a soft scrambled egg to a firm omelet in texture.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna keep all this in mind when I get some and make some.
Yeah. There are lots of guides on how to achieve different textures of polenta, and cooks do have strong opinions about how it should be done.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure.
Oh, yes. So however you think it is correct, I believe in you, and I want you to do that.
Yes.
We love a strong opinion.
We
do. polenta can physically, again, you do you, but it can physically be cooked plain with water or flavored with a stock of whatever variety, or made creamier with whatever kind of milk or cheese you like, or can incorporate stir-ins like herbs or spices or stuff like mushrooms. It can be served as a porridge or formed into cakes. It can be the starch base in a meal topped with meats or veg or stews, or be more the star of a dish or side dish with just simple garnishes or sauces. As cakes, polenta can be further grilled or pan-fried or lightly breaded and deep-fried. That way, it might be served on skewers or as a dippable snack. Small rounds of polenta are a type of gnocchi, gnocchi alla romana. So, you know, check that out. See our gnocchi episode for more on that. And these days, you can buy instant polenta, which is made with a fine grain cornmeal or perhaps pre-cooked cornmeal, or even totally pre-made polenta, either in like a microwavable bowl or in tubes like cookie dough, or pre-formed into cakes of various shapes and sizes.
Yes. And funnily enough, we're recording this later than we normally would because we had kind of a storm and power outages yesterday. And I was kind of slammed in like saving a lot of data. And so I was supposed to go to the grocery store yesterday. I was like, okay, I'm gonna just get somebody to deliver groceries for me. And I looked up polenta. And there was a comment argument under the polenta from like my local grocery store on this local delivery app.
Okay.
About like the quality of the polenta.
Oh, wow.
That they were offering. And I was like, this is hilarious.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
Yeah. And they were like, no, you should only get it if it's this kind, because this is just not even really polenta.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
A whole thread of comments.
Of strong heckin' opinions. Yeah. Yep. That's, I for sure ran across the opinion that instant polenta, like pre-made yes. polenta, maybe, but instant polenta, never.
Right.
Like, what are you even doing? Was the vibe. Just... And...
There's a part of me that feels so tickled by someone who would engage
sure.
in
uh-huh.
the comment thread.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of endearing, to be honest.
And I did write, like depending on which article I was reading, like, some people would be like, no, it's only medium grain. That's only the appropriate mm-hmm. grain. And other people being like, no, it's only coarse grain. That is the only appropriate grain. And mm-hmm. just very firm mm-hmm. and certain in their opinion. And I yep. was like, yeah, sure. Do I right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into it.
Into it. Well, what about the nutrition?
Actually, we are going to talk a lot about this in the history section. Corn is lacking in some vital nutrients. And so if you're eating too much of that at the expense of a wider variety of foods, then you can run into some problems. Mm-hmm. It's a starch. It's a starch base. It depends. Again, this is one of the things where, like, how much butter you put in there is really going to affect yeah. what the nutritional profile is.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a starch base. That's nice. It's so comforting.
It is. Mm-hmm. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
Okay. The like global production numbers of polenta are tied into those of cornmeal. And mm-hmm. I could not find a source without paying thousands of dollars for a market research paper. And I did not do right. that. So, no. So I have. Right. I have a couple of numbers for you. We have a world record. The Guinness record for the largest serving of polenta was achieved in 2015 in Italy. It weighed 5,020 kilos. That's 11,067 pounds.
Oh. Well, my whole rest of the day is derailed because I can't fathom this.
Yeah. Okay. If it helps, the dimensions or the dimension of the pot that it was made in, the pot was 2.5 meters in diameter. That's about 8 feet across.
I mean, it helps a little.
So this is like a full-on like hot tub sized serving of polenta.
Wow.
Like a large hot tub.
Hmm. Wow. Well, now I want to see if you ever read or seen The Black Cauldron. They need to do it with polenta.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. We'd have to figure out a lot of the details, but.
Sure. There's some logistics, but.
The idea is there.
It's right there. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are a number of polenta festivals in Italy in places where it is a traditional dish. And different festivals have different vibes, like all clearly involve polenta tastings. But, you know, some feature like football competitions, soccer. Some have like nonfiction book readings and agricultural presentations. And perhaps of note, one in Prato was in, as of this year, 2023, it was in its 447th year. It originated Whoa. After the events of 1512, when, the story goes, the Spanish sacked the town, lots of death and destruction, and in the famine that followed, the local lords sent along some chestnut flour, along with herring and cod, to help the survivors out. And at the time, chestnut flour, not cornmeal, was what polenta was being made with there.
Mm-hmm.
So, previously on Ash Wednesday, now on the first Sunday of Lent, they hold a chestnut polenta festival. It involves all of this historical reenactment and costumes and a parade and these big, round, like 2 foot across cakes of chestnut polenta, plus herring and cod, of course, and other foods and wines. It's run, this is my favorite detail, it's run by this historical group that calls themselves the Società della Miseria, which is the Society of Misery, or perhaps Poverty. I've seen it translated both ways. But that is just so, I feel like Italians are more goth, like, on any given Tuesday than I could possibly achieve being through trying an eyeliner. Like,
yeah,
I love this.
Yeah. I feel like we have a lot of these European, especially food societies, organizations.
Yeah.
Have these pretty like metal hardcore names.
So cool.
Oh, I know.
I love it.
It is. I do too.
I hope that, you know, like if our society survives another couple hundred years, that these type of historical societies pop up here in the United States.
Yes. I hope so too. I hope so too. It also just, I love the idea that if you grow up in a place, like maybe having a polenta festival run by the Society of Misery is just normal.
Like, oh, clearly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's... I love that. I grew up in a small town. We had a festival. And to me, it's pretty normal. And I bet to a bunch of other people, it's not. But it's just kind of funny that, yeah.
Yeah. That's the day that we all get our 16th century costuming on and go down to the town center and eat some polenta. And that's what you do. Yeah.
I don't know why you're so confused about it. Yeah. I love it. Well, we do have quite the history for you.
We do. And we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsors.
Yes, thank you.
So, corn and cornmeal are native to the Americas, and corn is a different and terrifying episode.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about baby corn. For a minute, I thought maybe we had already done corn. I think we've done a lot of things.
Corn adjacent.
Yes, exactly. But we have not tackled corn.
Yeah. In like the tortillas episode and, some other things that involve cornmeal.
Yes. Yes.
That is a problem. That is right. That is a number of problems for future.
Yes, it is. And I will say this one is a bit messy because of the corn aspect that so many people consider as necessary for modern polenta. Like you don't, if it doesn't have cornmeal in it, it's not polenta.
Right. And there are other like additions of different flours that different people incorporate. But it's pretty solidly considered how you make polenta in most places these days.
Yes, yes. And it made like tracking down pre-corn polenta very, very difficult. But it did exist. Before the introduction of corn to Italy, polenta was made with a variety of things like barley, millet, or ground up chestnuts. As far back as ancient Rome, according to some sources, people were eating something that is close to what we would call polenta. But yeah, people like to fight about it. When Europeans started colonizing North America, cornmeal was a literal lifesaver for many during tough winters when food was scarce. And corn had a few advantages over wheat, like shorter growing seasons, higher yield. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it spread pretty quickly around the rest of the globe when the Europeans found out about it. From Europe to the Middle East to Asia, Europeans at the time wrote that Native Americans cooked cornmeal with water and served it with sauces and sometimes proteins like fish. So that sounds pretty close to polenta. A lot of articles I read described a sort of excitement in Europe, and in this case, particularly amongst Venice merchants, around new products coming from the Americas in the 1500s, because they wanted to trade these items. They wanted to profit off of this excitement. Mm-hmm. But to do that, they had to find ways to convince people how to use it. Because like what we talked about in episodes kind of like hot chocolate, there was a bit of a learning curve of educating folks about how they could use these ingredients that were new to them. It's kind of like those recipe books that would come out that we talk about all the time in like the 1920s where they're like, you can use bananas with mayo. It's sort of like that.
Yeah, you can.
You can. But one of the easiest ways to use corn was to grind it up and use it as a flour. And most people were familiar with flour. They knew how to use flour. So that was kind of a good jumping off point for convincing people, you want this thing, you can use this thing.
Yeah.
From there, people could boil the flour, the cornmeal by itself or with flavorings or additions to come up with a hearty and filling porridge. And corn did grow pretty well in parts of Europe, particularly southern Italy, and it was cheap, meaning that it was part of the diets of classes of lower socioeconomic status. By the 17th century, cornmeal was largely in general use, and it became the staple that was used to make polenta. However, as you mentioned at the top, Lauren, it was a filling and cheap alternative, but it didn't have, polenta didn't have all the nutrients people needed. And the impoverished relying on it suffered because of that, specifically from a degenerative disease called pellagra, stemming from a deficiency in vitamin B3. And this was a big deal. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it before in previous episodes. Records exist going back to the second half of the 1700s that were linking pellagra to polenta consumption in Italy. A survey from 1879 found that 9 out of 10 of those surveyed in regions where polenta was common suffered from pellagra. Yeah, it was pretty severe. Notably, indigenous peoples in the Americas had figured this out way earlier and knew to supplement things like polenta or corn porridge with beans and tomatoes, stuff like that. The Europeans did not have this knowledge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in Italy in 1819, there was this phenomenon of polenta blooming with spots of what appeared to be blood.
What?
Like prepared polenta sitting out would suddenly grow these red spots on it. And people were like, it is cursed by the devil. That is what is going on here.
Obvious. Mm-hmm.
But a chemist by the name of Bartolomeo Bizio decided to get to the bottom of this. And he found a microorganism. He thought it was a fungus. Turns out to be a bacterium. He named it Serratia marcescens. And this is a bacteria that will grow in a colony and will produce this pink to red kind of pigment. If you've ever had like in your shower, like on your shower curtain maybe, or like in your toilet bowl, a little bit of pink coloration, that's what this is from. It can be pretty benign or cause all kinds of problems. But I wanted to bring it up because, again, like this is just so heckin' metal. That's great. Like people were like, blood is growing on my polenta. It's been cursed by Satan. And mm-hmm. This guy got to the bottom of it. It's pretty cool. It was also happening sometimes on statues. Like, it would create this red pigmentation on statues. So it looked like the statues were bleeding. I love it.
Ooh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
Also, I am admittedly kind of nervous around grains after The Last of Us. So they knew what was up.
Yeah,
fair enough. Well, polenta's popularity post-colonization in the United States dates back to at least 1824 when Mary Randolph published a polenta recipe in her work, The Virginia Housewife, which, fun fact, Lauren and I are very different in how I do these outlines.
Mm-hmm.
I like word vomit and then edit it.
Oh, yeah.
I was going back over yesterday to fact check and edit and all that stuff. And I accidentally put Maya Rudolph instead of Mary Randolph. And I was reading it and I was like, I don't think that's right.
That
I don't
seems
think that's
wrong.
Right.
That seems incorrect.
I'm so glad. I was like, no, I got to check that. Nope. It was incorrect. Very incorrect. But anyway, one of the reasons that polenta was absent in cookbooks before this was this association of polenta amongst the more well-off as a, quote, poor man's gruel or porridge. And there was also racism around Native Americans and their foods. Mm. Yeah. I wasn't expecting to find this, but I found some anecdotal accounts of Italians about their relatives being forced to give up their polenta pots during World War II.
Oh, huh.
So, yeah, so that they could be melted to make things like ammo. Because of that, some had this painful association with polenta, and it was also kind of associated with, like, it was something that you could eat during rationing.
Sure.
in Italy. So people had kind of this painful association with it.
The same way that like kale fell out of fashion over here after it being such a wartime garden staple. Sure.
Exactly. And then that kind of got amplified for people who were forced to leave Italy and came to America and lived in poverty here. But when that generation died out, a lot of their children or their grandchildren sought out polenta as a link to their heritage and their past.
So, oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah, it was a pretty moving article that I found about it. The Americas, particularly the non-indigenous population, had their own struggle with pellagra, especially in North America and particularly in the southern part of North America. Between 1907 and 1940, around 3 million Americans developed pellagra. And this is worth mentioning because polenta, or the southern equivalent of it, a lot of people like to fight about this, like I said,
mm-hmm.
was consumed more commonly in the South. And also, once again, if they'd listened to the indigenous folks, then they probably could have avoided the whole thing. Stepping way back, but this blew my mind.
Okay.
Let's talk about Bram Stoker's Dracula.
All right, let's.
I mean, you brought up blooming blood, Satan's blood and polenta. Let me talk about Dracula.
Okay.
It was published in 1897, and it included a mention of polenta. And here's the quote, and I apologize if I butcher a lot of this because I tried to look up the pronunciations and no luck, no luck.
Okay, okay.
Here we go. I had for breakfast more paprika and a sort of porridge of maize flour, which they said was mamaliga, polenta, and eggplant stuffed with forcemeat, a very excellent dish, which they call impletata. It does sound good.
That does sound, yeah, that sounds great.
I need to go back and read that book, because this, it's been a minute since I've read it, and I don't remember this
at all. I don't think I ever got through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Well,
anyway,
in the 1970s, there were scientific studies into whether polenta was a, say it with me, aphrodisiac.
That's why usually we get this way earlier than like the 1970s. That's great.
I know. I was like, surely. But yeah. And as with many things we discussed, polenta has gone from this, quote, poor man's food to something frequently found on the menu of expensive restaurants in recent years. That's not to say that it's not made in home still at all, but I mean, my association with it, with this one time I had it, was that's too fancy for me. That's why I've never had it.
Oh, wow. Huh.
It wasn't. Yeah, I literally thought like, oh, that's something I would get at an expensive Italian restaurant. I won't. And I found some articles that were mostly tongue-in-cheek, but they were making the point about grits, which is not the same thing. Not the same thing. But they were saying kind of, it's like that thing where grits is seen as so kind of cheap and only a certain type of people eat it, and it's bland and all this stuff. But if you changed grits to polenta, like the name, how many people would be like,
ooh,
oh,
no.
No.
I love that. Right. Yeah.
Right. Hmm. It was interesting.
I mean, and there is also the phenomenon of Southern food becoming this elevated restaurant thing recently where, like you go, it's so wild to me back when we were traveling and we would be in a completely non-South part of the country and there would be grits on menus. And I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, like, cool, but like what?
Right.
Like, no, I'm not going to get the shipping grits like that. Like, I can get that at home and it's probably going to be better. Sorry.
But... yeah. I will never forget one of the first times I went to New York and I was like, your country girl going to the big city. Uh-huh. My tour guide happened to be someone who was quite rich. It's a long story, but anyway.
Okay cool.
She was telling me about, she was like, there's this new restaurant I've got to take you to in downtown New York. They have 20 types of grits. And I was like, what?
Wow. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, I hope they were all delicious. We did not end up going.
Oh, okay. Okay. That, yeah. I was going to say, where was it good grits?
I have no idea what 20, I mean, I guess I could, if I really thought about it, I could come up with 20 types of grits, but.
Yeah, there's different varieties of corn and different grinds on the cornmeal and different ingredients you can incorporate and different methods of cooking. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I was looking at menus last night and I saw a lot of polenta and I was kind of, I don't have the experience with polenta. So I couldn't judge, but I was like, wow, you can really do polenta in a lot of ways. I didn't realize. But yeah, maybe, like we said, maybe we'll get to test it out, report back.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, that's what we have to say about Polenta for now.
It is. We would, of course, love to hear from you. And we do have some listener mail for you. And we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
She's breathing right now? Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Whew. It's like stirring polenta.
Stirring. Yeah.
That's what I remember from the time that Chef was cooking it. It was a lot of stirring.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Taylor wrote, I am catching up on episodes and have a few stories when it comes to rabbits. Mm-hmm. The first is that I, too, am a terrible rabbit owner.
Oh, no.
When I was about 6 or 7, my parents let my sister and I get rabbits as pets. My dad told us not to scare them and went on with his day with no explanation as to why. The cages of these rabbits were on rolling carts so that we could move them out onto the patio if the weather was nice. So the cage itself was about 3 feet off the ground. Being the curious kid I was, I wanted to know why we couldn't scare the rabbits and set off to creep up below the cage. I jumped out at the rabbits and sure enough, one had a heart attack and died. I was devastated. My mom came running in to see what was wrong, and when I told her what my dad had said, she immediately started to yell at him that you can't just say that you can't scare rabbits and not explain. Needless to say, we did not get any more rabbits. Traditionally, rabbit is a very popular meat in Sicily, where my family comes from. Because of the accessibility for trading in during the Age of Exploration, Sicily was one of the first areas to receive chocolate, and thus it is in many of our dishes. One particular dish I remember from childhood was a rabbit in a mole-like chocolate sauce. My parents told me to eat it to see if I liked it before telling me that it was rabbit meat.
Oh.
And my little ears heard rabid meat, which is what we still refer to it as today.
Yeah.
Finally, in regards to Annie's traumatic Pixar short, when you first started discussing the rabbit in the Pixar short, I thought you were going to talk about Presto, which is a short about a magician's rabbit who takes over the show by refusing to be pulled out of the hat. It was one of my favorite shorts as a kid, and I hope it can reinstill some trust in rabbit shorts for you. The one Annie describes sounds terrifying, and I am glad I have never seen it. Yeah. As you should be. Although I was almost a terrible person and I almost sent the link because I feel like it has to be shared like the ring,
as I said. Yeah, no, I see. I see you.
I have never seen Presto, but it sounds way cuter.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That one is nice. I can, yes.
You can attest.
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that is, you have to explain things to kids or they'll just, I mean, you have to explain things to me at a certain point. Like this counts towards adults too. Like,
yeah.
Don't just give someone a rule and then expect them to not do it. You're like, well, I never would have thought of it before, but now I need to know what happens.
Exactly. And I don't think I explained it to you, Lauren, after we talked about it. I don't think I ever said, but that's kind of what happened to my rabbit.
No.
I was so excited to see her, Fluffy. And I was like, ah, Fluffy. And I ran at her and she jumped so hard. And that was it for Fluffy. So I see you, Taylor. I see you.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
Well,
R.I.P. Fluffy.
R.I.P. Fluffy. Yeah. poor buddy.
Also, I love rabid meat.
Yeah.
What a thing to feed someone.
Right? But,
you know, so again, cool. When you're a kid,
yeah.
you're like
oh, okay. All right.
Rabid
That's how it works.
Meat.
Chad wrote, "We are tickled pink listening to your latest episode about Bock beers while catching up from a long break where we just happened to be in Louisville for Bock Fest, goat races, and food. Long story short, we invited 4 couple friends of ours to hang out with us in Louisville doing all things we loved when we spent time there during the pandemic, which of course included Bock Fest. Well, a much abbreviated version during 2020 to 2022. The city is filled with great food and bourbon and people, and if you haven't yet visited, let us know and we'll happily share our list of goodies and places to go, eat, drink. It's a lovely place and we know you'd like it. Plus, there are many Olmsted-designed parks to go and explore. It's like a Midwest Central Park city. So here are a few photos and a video of the goat parade. And yes, they do goat races throughout the day. It's really crazy because some of those goats just do not care to race, while others run any way they like."
Yeah. Thank you for confirming this, because that's how I thought the goat races
right.
would be.
Right. Like, you tell a goat to race, and it's either going to, like, stand there and stare at you with its creepy little goat eyes, or,
just
it's going to run amok. Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Run amok. Exactly. Exactly. The pictures were great. Much appreciated.
Yes.
It sounds like a hoot. It sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, a hoot and a nanny. Yes. And we love Louisville. Yeah. We got to go. Was that our very first field trip?
I think it was. I think like outside of the Atlanta area. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to go and talk to some bourbon folks at Russell's Reserve and try some bourbon and eat a hot brown. Order too many plates of that for the table and have a lot of food. Oh man, I would love to go back. What a great place.
It was fun. It was a great trip and it was beautiful.
Oh sure.
We got to see some of the scenery kind of outside the city and it was very, very pretty.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.